General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
A strange little tale from the vastness of Africa, but one that does, I think, illustrate the vileness and cruelty of the poacher, his complete lack of feeling for the animals he butchers. What was it Frederick the Great once said? Who is indifferent towards an animal is bound to be indifferent towards his fellow humans. In the northeast corner of South Africa is a tract of land that is dear to all of us here in the Republic and to countless thousands throughout the world. The Kruger National Park. Without question, it is the finest wildlife sanctuary in existence. But the park didn't just happen. The animals didn't just congregate there of their own free will. It came through years of courageous, fearless endeavor by a group of men, the game rangers, or wardens as we call them today. I will tell you the story of one of these men, and of one of the animals which lived in the park. The man's name was Volatil. The animal was a lion. For a little while, their lives ran parallel, both noble, courageous, and splendid in their individual achievements. But fate decreed that man and beast should meet. This, then, is the story of that meeting, one I have called Savage Encounter. Once, big game roamed the Cape Peninsula, and the lions of Natal were famous. But, bit by bit, the white man, and in particular the native, hunted and killed the game for food and trophy. Slowly but surely, the game moved northwards. And towards the end of the last century, there was the imminent danger that the wildlife of southern Africa would be exterminated. It was on March the 26th, 1898, that the park had its real beginning. President Kruger, after whom it was named, was one of the first to appreciate that a sanctuary was the only way to preserve the wildlife of the country. However, it was not until 1926 that the National Parks Act was passed, and finally the reserve became what it is today.
The Kruger National Park. 8,000 square miles bounded on the east by Portuguese East Africa. It extends for more than 200 miles northward from Komatipoort up to the Limpopo River, where that waterway divides the Transvaal and Rhodesia. It averages between 40 and 60 miles in breadth and has over 1,200 miles of highway.
Those are the facts. Those are the dimensions of the stage for the drama. It is time now for the entrance of our first actor, the man.
Harry Volatil was born in Beaufort West in the Karoo on the 14th of February, 1877. The boy Volatil was strong and calm and steady.
Hey, young man. I think you're meant to be doing some work, aren't you?
Hello, Dad. Look, I think I've got this rifle to work all right now. Watch this.
That's your mother's laundry line.
There we are.
Two pegs with two shots.
Yes. Well, now you'd better go and pick up that sheet. If your mother catches
you... All right, Dad. You know, I was wondering. If I altered the spring on this trigger, I might get a faster action. You know, like that American sharpshooter we saw at the circus.
Very well, my boy, but first that laundry.
When Harry Volatil left school, he found his first job in a training school at Maresburg. From there, he went to Johannesburg, where he took a job in a billiard room. By now, he was a crack shot, and it wasn't long before he could take on the best at billiards or snooker. The youth, Volitor, was strong and calm and steady.
Harry, why don't you make up a foursome? Boys would like a game of snooker.
Of course, sir.
A fiver a side.
You know I don't play for money. Besides, it's not allowed.
Scared?
Okay. Shall I break?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Not bad for a kid. Now, you just watch your Uncle Joe pot that red.
Well, can you beat that? He's sunk all the colors.
You've the steadiest eye I've ever seen. Well, here's your fiver, lad.
I don't play for money, thanks, Joe. You keep it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to set up the tables.
After a while, Volitor left his job in Johannesburg and returned to his parents in the Eastern Transvaal. Then he enrolled in Kainaka's horse, and in 1902, he first met Lieutenant Colonel Stevenson Hamilton, who had just become warden in the reserve. Hamilton wanted rangers for the park, and Volitor consented. He had this to say of his decision.
I was now on the eve of a completely new experience. For henceforth, I was to protect game instead of hunt it. And I've never regretted my metamorphosis from hunter to guardian.
Nature had molded him. Fate had prepared him. The man Volitor was ready for his savage encounter.
It is now time for our second actor, the Beast. Blackmane was one of a litter of four cubs. At the age of four, he was completely independent, one of a number of bachelors who lived near a fully grown male in his harem. They lived on the leftovers of this family, never daring to come too close to the male, but biding their time, watching the tactics of the male, envying him his harem. Blackmane now weighed over 400 pounds. Then, one day, he made his first solo kill. The lionesses had been stalking a coolie bull, but the animal had got wind of them before they could make their final charge. The kudu came crashing out of the thorn bush straight in front of Blackmane. Blackmane moved with bewildering speed. The great bull reared as if in some God-given access of strength he would leap clean over the young lion. As the kudu sprang, so did Blackmane. He took the bull by the throat. The two of them towered higher and higher. The speed of their movement was that of a rocket as they reached the apex of their flight. Blackmane swung onto the back of the fear-crazed animal. 400 pounds of fury gripped with two sets of steely claws into the kudu's face, jerking back its head. Then, with a single tremendous bite through the vertebrae, the buck fell with a thud. Instantly and cleanly killed. Blackmane licked his chops, the thrill of the fight still pounding through his veins. Then he heard an ominous grunt. He raised his massive head. 20 yards away, the lionesses were watching him. And, starting towards him, every movement an indication of possession and arrogant defiance, was the big male. Normally, Blackmane would have given way, but not this day. This was his kill, and so he stood his ground and waited for the bleak male.
Harry Volitor looked around for a suitable spot to build his permanent camp in the park, and eventually chose Matimba. From here, he began in real earnest to patrol and learn the whole of his section. This work was always carried out on horseback with pack donkeys, although most of the time he had to walk, as the donkeys could not travel more than 3 miles an hour. Volitor and his three piece boys usually made an early start and kept on the march until 11 o'clock, when they would cook their breakfast and rest until midday. Then they would trek onwards until late in the afternoon or sundown, all depending upon when they found water.
At night, they were far too tired to chop down bush to make a screen for protection. So they were accustomed to select an open spot in the bush, making two or three fires near the horse and donkeys, in case Lion appeared during the night. One night, Volator was awakened by the dogs barking excitedly.
Dogs must have wakened me. Better get up, see what's going on. Petrus! Petrus!
Ah, boss!
What the dickens is the matter with the dogs?
Hey, too late. Too.
That's better. I wouldn't mind if there was something to bark at.
Boss, look!
What's the matter, boy? Something out there making you bristle. You know this. Get my rifle, Petrus.
Yeah, boss.
Easy, boy. It's a funny night. Too much moon. The lions are kicking up a devil of a racket on the arm. Now everything's quiet.
Your rifle, boss.
Now. Let's take a look around the edge of the camp. You can't miss much in this light. Petrus. Look. Look there. Standing on top of that ant heap as bold as brass. He's only 30 yards away.
A lion?
Yeah.
Ow. He's a big one.
So the dogs were right, huh? Well, my beauty, this will teach you to show off.
Buzz, shoot.
I can't see my sights too well. Is this more light? Just have to guess it.
My buzz, you kill him?
No, I missed. Well, they usually grunt when a bullet hits. That one didn't even murmur. See, there he goes. Anyway, that's one lion that won't bother us tonight. Don't look so disappointed, Petrus. There'll be other lions to kill. We've got to give the game a chance to breed up.
Boss, Volator, the lions here are clever. They can kill, too.
The big male started for him. Black Mane left his kill and faced his opponent squarely. The big male stopped, puzzled. Normally, a roar or two and a few threatening steps were enough to frighten the young bachelors. But this one, this Black Mane youngster, actually had the temerity to challenge him. A blind black fury filled him, his face wrinkled in a snarl of hate, his tail lashed vigorously from side to side. Then he charged. This time, in earnest. He knew the big male had the advantage of weight and experience. Black Mane was more agile, but most of all, there was within him, stronger than the big male's fury, more overwhelming and more determined, a will to conquer and become Sultan of the Harem. As the big male leapt for his throat, he sidestepped and struck with all his power. His paw caught his rival a glancing blow, unbalancing him. That was all Black Mane needed. He charged, hitting the staggering lion with his shoulder, and then, avoiding a slashing claw, gripped hard with his massive fangs. Then the fight became a blur of golden fur and flashing fang and dust and dirt. But Black Mane held on, shaking his head, never relaxing those iron jaws. The world of the bush echoed and re-echoed with their roaring and grunting. And still they fought. Eventually, with a tremendous heave of muscle and sinew, the big male broke free. Instantly, Black Mane swung round to face the new attack. After a final deafening roar, now somewhat hollow in defeat, the big male turned and limped away into the gathering dusk. Black Mane licked his wounds. 50 yards away, the lionesses stood waiting. One of them whimpered. Black Mane padded across to them. He had conquered. He was the victor. He was now king.
During the summer months, Harry Bolitar carried out the usual patrols in his own section. And it was gratifying for him to watch the game slowly increase, especially the smaller varieties round about McTimber, such as reedbuck, duiker, and bushbuck. All assegais and rifles had now been taken away from the resident natives, and as they were no longer allowed to keep any dogs, very little game was being killed by poaching. Winter came, and Bolitar returned to his base at the Ulefants, where he settled down to his daily life in the veld. Here again, to his great pleasure, he observed a steady increase in the abundance and variety of game. One day, while out riding with Petrus, he received his greatest thrill so far.
It's funny. I've never noticed those two rocks down there before.
Rocks, Bass?
Yes, on the edge of that big pool.
I corner rocks, Bass. Look, one, he move.
By Jove, yes. And now the other one's moving. The elephant, Petrus.
Elephants. Boss Wanita is right.
Well, things are suddenly coming along. They must be the first elephant ever to appear in the park. Do you know something, Petrus? In a few years' time, this park is going to attract visitors from all over the world.
Black Mane was hungry. He was fully grown, this great dark-maned lion, the epitome of the grace, speed and strength and cunning wisdom that goes to make a whole pride of his more ordinary fellows. His head was tremendous. It was supported on shoulders of enormous power. His forelegs were worthy columns to support this huge entablature. In the little wind that blew across the thorn, his long mane hair took waves and sweeps of infinite beauty. Black Mane was strong and beautiful. And he was hungry. He raised his massive head and sniffed the light breeze. Then he turned and padded off into the bush, one of the lionesses at his side. Black Mane was hunting.
It is evening now, and Harry Bolitar is returning from one of his usual patrols on the Oliphants. As he rides, he is ruminating on the happenings of his patrol.
It's getting dark. How long have I been away from camp? 2 days? Yes. Pity that water hole was empty. What else could I do but push on to the next one? It's only 12 miles away.
Black Mane is 1 mile away. Black Mane is hunting.
If I was wise in telling the boys I'd ride on ahead. It's my duty to find that water hole. Funny how quickly it gets dark out here.
Black Mane is 1/2 mile away, and Black Mane is hunting.
Long grass ahead. Check around. No, can't afford the time. 12 miles. Funny how long it seems at night. Here comes the grass. Let's go through.
Black Mane sniffs the air. He stops. The lioness at his side. He crouched down. The night is dark and the spot ideal. The grass is long.
What's that? There are so two animals jump up ahead on me. Probably a pair of reedbuck. Steady, boy, steady. There it is. It's still coming for me. Closer. Closer. How can it be? Three yards away. Two lions.
This is the time. This is the moment fate has chosen. This is where man and beast meet. Nature equipped you for this helivolator, for this awful trembling minute. And you too, Black Mane. You are hungry. You've never seen man before, but he looks puny, and you are strong and massive. Now! Now! Now!
No time to use the rifle. Get the horse away. They're after him. Spurs. Kick. No. No, it's too late. The lion's too close. He's on the horse. I'm falling. Falling. Where's the other? The big black mane one.
Where? Where? You can't move, Harry Volitor. The breath is driven from your lungs. You can smell him. The thick, heavy, hot smell of lion. He's over you now, bending that massive head. Those jaws are open and...
My shoulder! My shoulder!
Against my face. I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. Think.
Your sheath knife, Harry Volitor.
Your sheath knife, Harry Volitor.
My sheath knife? I always carry it.
But where?
The right side.
The right side?
Yes. The right side. It's still there. It's always loose in its sheath. I dropped it before. If only I can get my left arm under my body. Easy. Easy.
6 inches away, your fingers tremble.
4 inches away, your fingers stretch.
Nearer.
And nearer.
And cut it. That was a stab. I got somewhere. Mama dropped me, picked me up in some vital spot. No, it must be his heart. My aim must be true. Now.
He's dropped you, Harry Volitor.
Dropped you.
Strike again.
And again.
And again. I'm all sticky in fact. He's dropped me. He's dropped me and gone. I must get to my feet. I must win through.
You'll win through, Harry Volitor. You'll get to your feet and try to light the grass, hoping to keep the other lion away by fire. But you'll find the dew too heavy, so you'll climb a tree where the branches are low. And you'll manage to remove your belt and strap yourself to a branch, hoping that the other lion won't return. And if he does, your belt will hold you. Then, faint from loss of blood, you'll find the stars are dancing in the black sky. And then, no stars, no sky, nothing, nothing. And you, Black Mane, you'll stagger away into the long grass and lay your massive head upon the dew-wet earth. There you'll gasp your last few rasping breaths away. And, if lions do dream, dream of times when once they thought of you as king, when kudu meat was sweet and life was full and strong. And far away, you'll hear the echo of your wandering lioness's call. And to the rhythm of that wild anthem, your mighty heart will slow its beat. and stop forever. Dawn. Volita's native boys found him, weak but still alive, clinging to a tree. His urgent need was for water, and the boys had none. But Volita's iron will kept him going, and for 6 long, weary miles, he dragged himself to the next waterhole, only to find it dry. Eventually, his boys found some muddy water, which he greedily drank. Several days later, they carried him into Kumasi. And from there, Volita was taken to Barberton Hospital, where he lay for many weeks on the verge of death. But his incredible courage and sound constitution pulled him through. Harry Volita died on January the 30th, 1964. But his spirit lives on, a testimony to his courage and his love for the animals that roam the Kruger National Park. Since it was opened to the general public in 1928, and until very recently, there has been no record of anyone being attacked in a car. A gratifying and indeed wonderful record.
Join us again next week for another story of the African bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.